Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast. Happy New Year, everybody!
Happy New Year!
It's 2024!
Which has just this moment just taken me by surprise when I read it somewhere. 2024. How did that happen?
I know, it goes from that thing of thinking it's next year to being like, oh no, wait, hang on, that's this year.
Yeah. And you'd think as well that, like, when bookings come in and we're already writing in dates in the diary and things, you'd think I would know that 2024 was coming by now.
You know, it messes with your brain. They keep changing it. You get used to it and then they keep changing it. Anyway, how are you, Fiona? In this
rainy
New Year's Day. Well, it's not Year's Day, but 2nd of January recording this, and it's filthy outside.
Windy. Yeah, it's better than it was. It was drizzly, drizzly, drizzly all morning. But yeah, now the wind is wuthering around.
Wuthering.
Wuthering. Howling.
Is that what that means?
Wuthering. Yeah. I think so. It's the sound of wind in a building.
I suppose so.
What was it? We had a recording when I was young. We had someone reading Secret Garden. Okay. And there was the actress doing it, you know. She talked about the wind wuthering around house.
I've never heard it other than in connection with the word heights. But it's an onomatopoeic word. I like it very much.
Absolutely. At least I think that's what the way I've always used it. Who knows? It may not actually mean that at all.
Well, let's use it that way and be happy with that. Well, anyway, hi listeners. That's another one. We started the new year and immediately just started waffling around about nothing in particular. Hi everybody.
No change there then.
We hope you had a wonderful festive break and new year. And I know it's not always the easiest time of the year for everyone, but I hope it was everything you needed or wanted it to be. For a lot of guides out there, it was busy. It was busy. That week between Christmas and New Year is the most bonkers week, isn't it?
It is. And to be honest, I quite often duck out of it, but I have been with one of the lovely marching bands who come over for New Year's Day parade, and just had a really lovely kind of three, four days on off with a group who are so enthusiastic.
Where were they from?
They were from San Jose. Okay. So actually two different schools, Oak Grove School and Independence All Stars.
Yay. Oh, fantastic.
So they did their bit in the parade on New Year's Day, and I whisked them round Windsor and Hampton Court and the Tower of London. Oh, very nice.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's always lovely, those marching bands. They're always so joyous. Yeah, they get, if anyone doesn't know, the New Year's Day parade in London is always basically a massive invite to loads of very, very good marching bands from the US who all come over. And our lovely colleague Stuart, who I think this year corralled something like 115 guides over the course of about 6 days, taking all these groups around and to all the big places. And then they do their amazing parade on New Year's Day.
And a big thank you to the places we visit as well, because Windsor and the Tower of London things, they organise us to get in at the time slots, and we get in really slickly without too much waiting around. But I must admit, Hampton Court, we arrived half an hour after it had opened, and the lady said it was very busy in the Tudor stuff. 700 people have come in the last half hour, and they're all in the Tudors.
Oh no! Oh my goodness!
Okay, 700
people
garden.
In half an hour. Wowzers. Oh my goodness. Well, we're into January now, and hopefully it'll calm down a little bit for us before the peak season starts out again. But we're back, and we are now, ladles and germs, we are now going weekly. Woohoo! We're back to being weekly. Yay! A new year, a new time.
Fresh lease of life.
Yes, something like that. Something like that. I'm not sure I feel quite freshly newly leased, but you know, we're there. We've been planning, Fiona and I have, plotting quite a lot of stuff over this winter period. We've been having lots of chats and plotting a really exciting year of podcasting ahead. We've got some really interesting stuff and some really interesting people coming up for you. So stay tuned, because we've got 52 epic podcasts.
That doesn't sound at all daunting.
No, I know.
Okay, we've got 49. Actually,
probably 51, because we take a week
really
off.
49 really good podcasts.
And a couple
and
of real
duffers.
There's
going to be three that are a bit dodgy. I tell you what, we're not going to tell you which ones those are.
Yeah, you just have to listen and find out. Well, let's hope it's not this week's one, because I'm starting the new year off. This is my week to present. So I have gone in for a really interesting chap who I can't remember when I found out about him, but he's sort of been rattling around my brain box for a little while now. And I just suddenly went, oh, you know what? We've got to chat about him, because we've chatted about quite a lot of eccentrics in our time on the podcast, both when Emily was co-presenting and now with you, Fi. And I don't know what it is about Britain. We do eccentrics really well, don't we?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes.
And this one it reminds me a lot of, do you remember that episode where we talked about, now the name of the street escapes me, but the guy who basically set up this massive prank.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And another one.
Ordered,
22, whatever it is. Street.
Yes.
Everyone
butchers
goes.
And yeah, all the butchers and everything that he ordered throughout the day. He wanted to make this spot the most famous place in London, and over the course of the day had epic numbers of deliveries and things coming through. This has got the same kind of ring.
Didn't the Archbishop of Canterbury turn up?
It was the Mayor of London, I think it was.
Okay,
The Mayor of London. But this has got that same kind of ring to it. Now, it's not on quite such an... Well, it is on an epic scale, but it's not on such an epic outward scale.
Okay.
Which sounds really odd.
I'm intrigued by this, because I think I know one thing about this person.
Okay. So the chap we're talking about today is known... his name is William Reginald Bray. To give you his dates off the top, 30th of April 1879 to the 6th of June 1939. So relatively recent.
Okay. Can I just butt in?
This is not the Bray you're thinking of.
I know nothing about this man.
Now, this is going to be very nerdy, guidey. Are you thinking of Reginald Bray from Windsor Castle? Oh, no, yes. That's far too boring. Far too boring. A guy who just gives loads of money and has his name shoved all over the place. No.
Yeah, I did wonder why you were so keen to talk about him.
No. It's not him at all. This guy is known as the postal prankster and the autograph king.
Oh.
So he is really interesting. Now, he's also, I guess, quite close to your own heart, because he was from Forest Hill, which is where you used to live, of course.
Yeah.
Where did you live? Oh, no, you're Surrey Keys.
I'm now in Forest Gate.
Forest Gate, that's what I'm thinking of. So, well, our lovely friend Simon Whitehouse actually lives about five doors down from where this guy used to live.
Aha.
At one point in time. I have asked them to have a look. I don't know. If there is one, I've never seen it.
Okay.
But on the face of it, there's nothing massively to pluck him out. He was an accountant from Forest Hill, born to a lovely couple, very normal upbringing, normal life, nothing massive to write home about until 1898. And in 1898, William Bray buys a publication that is going to change his life. And it's not a publication that you would think of, that you'd look out on the shelf and go, oh, now that looks exciting. He bought a copy of the Post Office Guide. Now, this is I know, right? Woo, the excitement. Yeah. Can't contain it. This is a book that you can still buy as sort of historical reproductions. They don't print it anymore for obvious reasons, and what it was an official guide to the services that the Post Office offered.
Okay.
It started out being published from 1856, and it was basically a book or a manual of information for both post office staff and the public about what you could send, how you could send it, all this kind of thing. And it gave regulations for mail, both inland and going to other countries as well. info that related to all of the services they offered, a list of all the current post offices. And it was kind of the yellow pages of the post office. And it was brought out quarterly. So they were constantly updated and things like this. And one of the key things in it was it said all letters must be delivered as addressed. Now, in order to kind of tell you a bit about how this works, I want to we spoke about it very briefly on, I think, the Christmas episode about the post and how it works. But I just want to give you a little bit of backstory. So the post office dates all the way back to the 1660. It wasn't called the post office. It was called the General Post Office, so GPO, established under Charles II. And anyone who knows the City of London, capital C, may well know the massive building right near, funnily enough, the park called Postman's Park, which was the GPO, was the General Post Office. It's now offices and what have you. But basically, what would happen is that it was the body that oversaw the kind of the infrastructure of messages getting around the place from the 17th century onwards. And one of the major developments, which I think we mentioned in the Christmas episode, was in 1837, Rowland Hill invents the adhesive postage stamp.
Yep.
And we mentioned that prior to this, well, actually 3 years later, the penny black comes in. So it's not immediate, but prior to this, anywhere that you were, you could send mail to somebody, and they had to pay to receive it. And that the amount they paid would change massively based on the distance, that had been carried, the how big it was, like how many sheets it was, all that kind of thing. So, you know, someone would receive something and you could be hit with a massive bill. You could say, no, I'm not gonna pay for it, and it would be sent back. And I don't know if anybody then would pay for the delivery or whatever. I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know. I was going to say, do you know the story about Rowland Hill, supposedly why he was inspired?
No. Tell me.
So he was strolling along one day and he sees a postman arriving at a house. And the postman knocks on the door, whatever. The woman comes out. She looks at the letter. She takes it in her hand. She looks at it. She shakes her head sadly and gives it back to the postman. And the postman walks away with the letter. And Rowland Hill thinks, oh my God, she can't afford to pay for the letter. She's got this letter with important news. She can't, oh, this is terrible. This is a terrible system. So he dashes off after the postman, and out of the goodness of his heart, he pays for the letter.
Oh.
And then he takes it back to the house and he says, knocks on the door, here you go, I've got your letter. I saw that you didn't have it and presumably you want it. And I thought I should do the right thing, get it for you. And the lady says, well, that's very nice of you, thank you, sir, but actually I don't need it. It was a question and there was an answer, and the way the address was written contained the answer. It was in code. So I know that the answer was yes or no, whatever, and I don't actually need the letter. In fact, the envelope is empty, but thank you for paying for this empty envelope. And there's two interpretations of the story. Either in this case, it wasn't true, but it might be true that people couldn't afford their post and therefore this wasn't a good system. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, Rowland Hill realised that people were scamming the post office.
Yeah.
And thought, I'm going to make them pay up front. Which, frankly, makes so much more sense for everyone involved.
It does.
To pay before you post it.
100%.
Than afterwards. But yeah. But that's the theory. There is one day where he saw this transaction going down and went, ooh,
That's so interesting. I've never heard that story. But yeah, like you say, there's one of two options. And it's interesting that you mention codes in envelopes, because that is going to come back in this story a little bit later. So without knowing at all, you've made a nice little link there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to dangle that as a little cliffhanger. So he invented the penny black, which, as you say, eliminated whichever problem he was thinking needs to be eliminated of those two, or possibly both, who knows. Either way, it's a win-win for everybody, I suppose. So the penny black comes in, and what it allows is letters of up to a certain weight, about 14 grams, to be delivered. It's a flat rate of one penny. And I have to say, I don't know if you know this, this was the first stamp issued anywhere in the world for sending letters.
Oh, I didn't.
No, I didn't know that. I knew it was the first one in the UK. Didn't realise it was the first one anywhere in the world. But it's quite intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I like this thing about sending a bit of mail to give a response without anyone having to pay for it. So yeah, there's a lot of extra work for the you know, no one's getting paid for that work.
Yeah. I just had a thought then, but I'm going to hold that thought until next week.
Oh, another cliffhanger. Oh, all right.
Jesus galore. I'm going to write it down, though.
I was going to say, I would forget, but all right. So coming back to this post office guide, in this guide, one of the things that they had guidelines for was the size and the weight of certain packages. And of course, the penny black up to 14 grams. But what do you do if it's over that? So they then had, you know, listed your weights, your prices, the sort of thing you'd find if you went onto the post office website today. And William Bray starts thinking, I can have a bit of fun with this. I can test their theory. And he looked really closely at the regulations. And what he found is that the small, actually, I'm going to get you to try and guess. What do you think the smallest item that you could send would be?
Ooh.
Now, bear in mind, I'm talking about unwrapped items here. So obviously okay. You could put anything in a bigger envelope, but I'm talking about what unwrapped yeah. item. What's the smallest thing that he could send?
Well, I'm thinking it's got to be big enough to put an address on it of some mm-hmm. sort, but maybe you can attach the address on a label.
Mm-hmm, that is a possibility, yep. And he does
so,
do that.
I mean, my first thought was a pebble, but that's maybe.
I mean, pebbles come in various sizes, small. Of course.
Well, they do.
But you're not a million miles away. And I have to say, he never sent these, but they're both animals. The smallest was a bee.
Oh.
I know. He did never send that because there's a few, obviously, tricky
unwrapped.
Things going on with that. Unwrapped, yes, yeah. obviously, but unwrapped. You never sent it.
Yeah.
What about the largest item that you could send? Again, unwrapped, and I'll give you a clue. It's an elephant. It's an animal.
It's an elephant.
It's an elephant, because I just nearly said the word.
I mean, I was going to go for that anyway.
Oh, let my brain run away with me there. That's the worst cliffhanger ever. Oh, my goodness. You were correct. It's an elephant. Well done.
It's an elephant. Way!
Now, for obvious reasons, he never sent an elephant and he didn't send a bee either. But he decided to test the system and he thought, right, I'm just going to start sending all manner of different things through the mail, unwrapped, but crucially with the correct postage paid. And if you remember what was in the guide at the very start, all letters must be delivered as addressed. So if you've paid the right amount and it's a valid yep. address, it's going. So here are just some of the many things that he sent. He sent a turnip with the address carved into it. He sent a bowler hat with the address on it. A bicycle pump. One of my favourite ones, he sent the collar of a shirt, just the collar, and also another occasion he sent the cuffs. And we do have pictures, which will be on the blog, where he's actually written the address on the collar of the shirt and the stamp
Fabulous.
And everything. And there are pictures yes. of this, so we're going to put them on the blog. Seaweed. He sent me seaweed. Yep.
So, but I mean, can I unwrapped?
Yeah. Because well, you can wrap anything up and put it in a package. There's no fun in that, is there? Let's face it.
Yes, no fun in that. No. But well, but, I mean,
can I tell you? I have something here that fits into this description. I'm going to get it. Right, stay there. I'm just going to
okay.
rummage in my cupboard.
Alex is leaving the screen. I can hear cupboard doors opening and shutting. I can hear a background giggle. Could you hear the giggle?
This is a good example.
Oh, aha.
Now this, and again, I'll put a picture on the blog.
Hey!
Is a coconut that was sent to me by my dad when he was stationed in Belize. And if you look at the side, it's a bit faded now. But the address and the stamp... is actually on the coconut. So one side of the coconut is painted, and apparently all kids whose parents like were in Belize at some point in the military have got one of these. But one point is this beautiful sunset view with a you know, some palm trees and the coast and a lovely sailing boat. And then one side is blank and one side has got.
Going to say for folks listening as well, it's smoother than you might expect. If you imagine a coconut in a kind of coconut shy situation. Very rough and hairy. The hair is not on this one.
Yes, no, it's in the outer pod that it comes down from the tree. And so inside this will be the coconut kind of thing.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So it almost looks like a big kind of triangular sort of
shell triangular.
Nut type thing, but big. I mean, it's probably what's about the side of my head.
Yes, at first glance, I thought it was a sort of big conch shell.
Yeah, just look a bit like that. But yeah, so even today, it is possible to do this, and it is addressed to me in Southcombe House, Wild Oak Lane, Troll, Taunton, and it's got two stamps randomly of Carrickfergus Castle, but this was sent from Belize. So there we go. So even today, it is possible to do this.
Yeah, but I mean that
not quite to the degree he does. Does
that
clarify things for you?
It does clarify things, but that's also a nice sturdy thing that obviously makes sense to send.
Yeah, so it's a turn up.
Yeah.
But also don't forget, you know, they don't have the level of
automation.
Automation and also just the number of things going through. So, you know, it's going to be a lot easier.
Yeah. So can I just also back, so he just sent these for fun just to try out the sending of them?
Yeah.
Or did he send them to the same person?
He usually sent them to himself. And he would usually only go to his local post office, which was a couple of hundred yards down the road. sometimes a little bit further away. Anyway, this is where he starts. Yeah, he starts by sending them basically to himself and seeing if they'll get there.
Okay.
And most of them do. He sends a half-smoked cigar. He sends a rabbit's skull. And the address is written on the nasal bone of the rabbit's skull. One of my favourite ones. This is absolutely brilliant. He drilled a hole through an old penny. And then in through this hole, he attached a little label. So you mentioned labels earlier. Absolutely, he did that. Little string with the label, addressed the label to himself. And then he posted it. But he either forgot or just didn't put on the postage. I don't know if he wanted to test the system or just completely forgot. The coin was delivered safely to him, but with a 2p charge for lack of prepayment. Which is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yes.
One of the things he posted as well was a crocheted envelope. His mum, he got his mum to crochet him an envelope. And on it, she just crocheted Bray Forest Hill. By this point, the post office knew him
really
well.
The address?
Bit of the address, not the whole thing, literally, Forest Hill. And they knew him by now. They were like, oh, it's him. We know exactly where it is. And it got to him. And so he's like, well, I'm going to send some trickier things. And he starts sending postcards that have puzzles on them, but puzzles for the postman. So, for example, he would send postcards where part of the address he had drawn it. So he'd drawn symbols instead of bits of the address. So, for example, there was one that was being sent to Deal's Key and he drew a key instead of the word key. And then other bits of the address had different bits. So the postman... it might have been like, oh, flipping heck. Or might be like, yay, brilliant, an escape room in a bit. So, but again, that got there. And this is when he's actually sending to other people as well. So he's testing other different methods of it. And often then requesting that they send it back to him so that he's then got it and can record that, you know, whatever. There was a brilliant one where he sent a postcard to a chap called Laurie Humphreys. And this is in 1899. And he didn't write the address out properly. What he did is he wrote a little poem on the front of the envelope or the postcard, and in the poem he embedded the lines of the address and then underlined those key bits in there so that they couldn't miss it and they couldn't just go, oh, that's rubbish. They'd be like, oh, hang on. So I'm going to read you what it says. So this is literally what he writes as the address. Now, postman with kindness, take heed what I say, as I want this for reasons delivered today at Ordhall Street in London town, the number's 30 some way down. And please don't charge any extra fees to Mr. Laurie T. Humphreys.
Brilliant. Fabulous. Yes.
He used photos on the card as part of the address. So if it was going somewhere in particular and he had a photo of it, he would use that instead. He said it's really hard to reach places. One of my favourites is so he sent a postcard to, he wanted to get it to the Bell Rock Lighthouse in Scotland. And he literally just wrote to the person in charge of Bell Rock Lighthouse via Aberdeen. And then that was it really. And then that was what he put. And then at the bottom of it, he put on the postcard, basically asked whoever it was who was in charge of it to redirect it back to him at his address. And he kind of, what he'd often do is then write, you know, your name, your dates, that kind of thing. And then basically would just say, get it redirected back to me. And in this case, he probably just wanted the really cool postmark from Arbroath.
Yeah.
You know, he was starting to collect. He was an epic collector. He just collected all sorts of stuff. He sent one to a friend of his using old postmarks as the address. And then the post office were like, nah, this is against regulations, and they imposed a charge on it. Uh-huh. And then he even wrote the back of the postcard in a sort of, I guess, some sort of cipher, in that the what he wrote looked completely mad, but what you had to do is read lines 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, etc., and then go back and read the odd numbers. Sorry, okay. The even numbers. So it's just like he's making life either a nightmare slash really fun for everybody. One, he threw a letter out of a train window, and on it was written, "Will the one who picks this postcard up at once without delay direct it to the above address where resides W.R. Bray?" So he likes to do poems as well. Uh-huh. He set another one on in some random, I can't remember where it was now, but a sort of a little beach. There was a kind of cave thing that people used to go and visit, and he tucked one in there and basically said, "If you find this, send it back to me. So he's sort of testing all kinds of stuff. It's really cool.
It's kind of like letting a balloon, hot air balloon, go, isn't it? Or one of those, like, see how far it goes, but just randomly.
Well, he did exactly that. He did the message in a bottle stuff as well.
Okay.
He
did that. I shouldn't be surprised.
One of my favourites. I know, right? Any option to kind of get something in the post from a weird way. He sent a postcard to, and it was addressed to, "A resident near this rock." And the front of the postcard had a picture of a rock formation called the Old Man of Hoy, which is on the Orkney Islands. And then at the bottom, he put a couple of fields for the person to fill in. He put "read by," so whoever got it, "date," "nearest village," and the distance from the rock. And the person who got it was, I think, about a mile and a quarter from the rock. And then they sent it back to him.
Wow. Amazing.
And he messed around with, like, methods of paying for things as well. One postcard had part payment in stamps from the reign of Queen Victoria and part from the reign of King Edward VII. So in theory, I don't know if it was the same back then, but once you bought them, you can always use them.
Yeah.
So it might be the same back then. You know, so he's messing around with a thing that is fairly new, that people probably haven't thought about. What do we do if this is a thing? And he's like, let's stress test the system.
Yeah.
Occasionally they didn't get delivered. Now, most of the time they seem to. The wackier they got, that's when you get a few things that don't get delivered. He tried by sending some really teeny tiny envelopes, and a couple of them were rejected and said too small to fit the guidelines. One he tried where he put postage on that had already been used, and they would come back. And they'd always come back with a fine, you know, that sort of thing. And he was fine with that. But on one of them, one of the postmen, who was clearly very used to his antics and shenanigans, decided to have his own go at it. And he wrote on one, which was undeliverable, "Pursuing this game, we hope there's not many. However, for your hobby, you will have to pay a penny." Now, he had so much fun doing this that he decided he was going to up the ante. And this is where he really goes, I mean, into the stratosphere of absolute eccentric legends. And I'm going to tell you that after this short break. Right, welcome back. So we have got to William Reginald Bray really annoying the postal staff with his shenanigans. And I said he's going to up the ante, and he absolutely does. Go on.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, not so annoyed that they're not composing poems back to him. So some of them are.
Well, some of them, yeah.
Some of them are getting on board.
I mean, I'd love it. I think it'd be great. Oh, I get a little game to play while I'm doing my job.
We once got, our postcode where I grew up was 4ET. And when the film E.T. came out, we got a letter and someone had written on it, "Phone home," in brackets.
I love that. Well, we always tell the story, don't we, of... Lock and Co, the shop in St James, where they once received a letter which was addressed to the best hatters in the world, London, and it was delivered there. Maybe this is one from William Bray. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know, the postmen were pretty, you know, pretty good at this sort of thing. But he ups the ante by deciding. Now, he didn't ever send a bee or an elephant, but he did decide he wanted to attempt to send an animal. So he posted his own dog. It's a little Irish terrier called Bob. Now, I say he posted his own dog. Now, we have images then of somebody shoving something into a postbox and it being shuffled through yeah. all these automated things and it being a squish and being really horrible. Basically what it was, in 1900, he sent Bob from the Forest Hill post office, which was a couple of hundred yards down the road.
Yep.
The journey took exactly 6 minutes to accomplish. So Bob is not going through any kind of automated thing.
No.
It cost William 3 pence per mile. And he then hilariously published a statement and the receipt for the dog in the paper. It's this little bit. And again, we'll pop it on the blog. And he says, I claim to be the first person. Wait, but he claims to be the first person to send an animal.
Yep.
And in the post, he says, certain animals, when posted, must be confined in a suitable receptacle, but dogs need not so long as they're docile. His dog was on an ordinary lead. So basically what he did is he went down there, went, I'd like to post my dog. They took his money. He went home. And then somebody from the post office walked his dog back to his house.
Yeah. And also.
And they got him to sign a receipt.
This is kind of in the days when there's more than one delivery a day, I'm guessing. Presumably it's like, I mean, there used to be lots of deliveries. You used to be able to play chess by post, couldn't you? Because there was deliveries back and forth and things. Like nowadays, they'd have to keep the dog until the postman was ready to set off at whatever time to get your delivery and things. So presumably this would be all much more complicated now than it was back then.
You just imagine them being like, right,
okay,
come on, Jeff, come out the back. Right, off you go. Quick trot down the road to William Bray's. But William Bray does claim that there is a reason for this. He's testing the service. He's testing what we're able to do. And he says in this little article, it's only small, but he says, readers will ask, what is the use of the post office extending such a service as this? I will tell you. Presuming you are sending your dog to a friend or veterinary surgeon and have not the time to take the animal yourself, this service comes immediately to your assistance.
Yeah.
So he's got a point. However, he is only sending a dog 100 feet or so down the road.
Yeah.
If your friend was in, I don't know, a completely different city, is up in Leicestershire
or
something.
It's not
going to work. There are more logistics that need to be considered.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. And, you know,
that kind of thing.
Progress of science, people test something to its limits. Mm-hmm. And some people might test gravity or the stretchiness of springs or whatever. But other people test the post office.
Test the postal system. That's fine. And let me tell you, he's going to test them again.
Aha. Uh-huh.
What do you think he's going to post this time?
Okay. So, an ice cube.
It's something living.
Oh.
No, it's something living. And we're going up from a dog. Bigger than a dog.
Is it a donkey?
It's not a donkey.
I would say giraffe. It's probably not a giraffe. Okay. Is it smaller than a donkey? Is it a horse?
Yeah. No, it's bigger. No, it's bigger than a donkey.
Bigger than
a bison?
No, not a bison.
It's on a different plane. It's on a different plane to a donkey. I'll put you out of your misery.
It's a donkey on its hind legs?
Sort of.
A different plane.
Sort of. Well, a donkey's like, you know,
horizontal. Okay. So it's
a
giraffe.
Plane.
No.
It's not a giraffe. It's himself. He posts himself.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes.
See what I mean about the plane thing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. To himself?
Well, yes, yeah, sort of yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
To his address.
Yep.
But obviously he was being delivered, so he needed someone to sign for him. I'll come to that was in a minute. So a new regulation basically comes in saying, and I quote, postmasters may arrange for the conduct of a person to an address by an express messenger. So he posts himself and his bike. And the postage receipt literally says on it, for person cyclist. He lived, like I say, lived a couple of hundred yards from the post office. So he went down, posted himself, and basically what happened is the poor message boy had to come out from the back. William cycled home and the messenger boy accompanied him. And then when he got there, his dad had to pay for it, had to receive him. His poor father, Edmund, who must have just been so sick and tired of his games. And in fact, there is the best picture, which again we'll put on the blog, of the messenger boy, his dad signing with the messenger boy. And outside, William's just standing there with his bike looking really bored. It's really funny.
Can I just say at this point that the fact that you said, you know, his dad is signing for it, am I amazed that he's not married?
He is married.
He is married. Okay.
Well, he is married at some point. I don't know if he's married by this point. He does get married. You know, I said he collects things, right? He collects people.
No, genuinely,
he is dating all three sisters and ends up getting married to one of them. He dates them all at the same time. Yep, absolutely. And gets married to Mabel. Now, whether he's married to her by the time he's posting himself, I'm not sure. I mean, he's born in 79. So by this point, he's 21. Yeah. So probably around that age. But yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, his dad is claiming him.
So he did cycle himself home. Like, he did pedal.
Yes. Yeah. He didn't, like, get a piggyback or anything. No, he cycled himself home. Because the bike was part of the parcel.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. So this poor little messenger boy, like, trotting along beside him.
Wait for me. A
couple of minutes down the road.
Where'd you live?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they would know. They're professionals.
That's all right. Follow the terrier.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And he gives himself, or I don't know if he gives himself, but he's definitely given the name, the human letter, which is very entertaining.
Yeah.
And then in the early 1900s, his focus changes a bit. So I mentioned all of these postcards that he's sending to all these different places. Starting out sending things to himself, then sends to other places and requests them to send it back. And somehow, and I mentioned he's a real collector, his focus shifts, and he still uses the post for this. But he stops, he still sends the odd weird thing, but he stops sending that so much. He starts to amass autographs. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these postcards that he'd asked to be returned on request must have given him this idea. And he starts basically sending out postcards to people going, can you sign this blank bit over here and send it back to me? And right. He sends this out to everyone, politicians, sports stars, artists, musicians, soldiers serving abroad. You know, if there's like a famous ship or something, he'll send one to the captain and the bosun and all this sort of stuff. The Pope he sends to, his local station master. So there's a massive mix of things. And he would just basically say, yeah, you know, and often if he was sending it to someone or something that was known, like the ship or a person in a particular, in charge, he sent one to the Royal Observatory in Greenwich at one point. So on the front of the postcard, if he could, he'd have a picture of that person or that place that he was sending it to.
Okay.
And over the next approximately 30 years, he sent somewhere in the region of 36,000 requests for autographs. I know. And he had many responses.
That's three a day consistently.
Well done. Yes, it is three a day. It is.
Three in a bit. Yeah.
That's a fact I've got for you. Yeah, three a day. Well done. Oh my God, that's some impressive maths right there. And he gets, you know, so he gets them. I say emails. No, he doesn't. He messages. No, he doesn't. He sends things to, like, well, gets them back rather from famous people, non-famous people, and people who are like locally famous, you know, music hall stars and stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
He gets them back from famous striptease artists, pilots, some famous names, Laurence Olivier, Charlie Chaplin, Haile Selassie, the Emperor of Ethiopia. There's a few people who decline, and you might be surprised at some of the people who decline. One of them is Churchill, because you know probably Churchill doesn't go in for this sort of silly stuff.
No.
The royal family decline. All of the people he asks. Apparently they don't sign autographs, although they're pretty happy to send letters and stuff. So I don't know. Anyway. And there's one person who he requested 5 times to have the autograph of, and I think it was probably more to annoy him than anything else, and it's somebody you would somebody you would never expect you'd want, and bear in mind the era. Any idea who that might be?
Hitler.
Absolutely. Hooray. Now bear in mind this is prior to World War II, still. But he basically kept sending request for an autograph 5 times, and in the end he became such a pest that they responded in a letter just going, our leader is overworked and do not send anymore,
just no.
So yeah, and then he starts out with these picture postcards, and gradually, because he was sending about 3 a day, you're quite right, he decided to stick to plain cards. He thought, I need to be more efficient, so he basically had bespoke, what looked like calling cards really, but bespoke postcards printed with his details on. This makes it easier for him, but it also gives him a lot more credibility, because by this point people have, you know, they know about him, and also it's very much, you know, like from the desk of, that way of people send letters, you know, with their address and everything on it. And by the time he died in 1939, he had amassed the world's largest collection of autographs. They don't know exactly how many, but it's in the region of 15,000 to 20,000 autographs.
Wow.
And he declared himself the autograph king, which I think is fair enough, really.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, no, intriguing mix, though. Like, presumably, I mean, if you... Okay, you might be about to say this, of what happens next to the collection, kind of. But you can imagine if you took all of those to a shop or whatever, they would go, yeah, these ones are worth selling. These ones, these known people, but those ones are not worth anything or whatever. So... I don't know why I was asking this question, really.
Well, so it's a good question. What happened to them? His daughter sold the collection in the 1950s. Now, I'm not 100% who owns it now, but I do know that there is a book about William Bray called The Englishman Who Posted Himself and Other Curious Objects.
Okay.
It's by a guy called John... Now, I don't know if it's pronounced Tingy or Tingy. T-I-N-G-E-Y. Uh-huh. But there is an incredible log of everything by, I think it's by John Dingy or Dingy, on wrbray.org.uk. And on there, you can see images of a whole heap of stuff. It's literally broken down year by year. And then you click into the year and then it will say autographs and then curios and all sorts of stuff. Wow. There is a wealth of stuff on there. So I don't know if he owns that collection. He may well do.
Yeah, that would kind of... make sense, but
but it's I had the absolute best time tootling through this thing, and just, you know, it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, he's got so many pictures on there. There's a brilliant picture of William Bray physically putting a couple of onions into a postbox with a letter with a tag attached. There's a family photo of his family with Bob the dog as well. There's a photo of him being delivered with his bike, like I mentioned. And then pictures of all of these incredible postcards. There's pictures of the collar and the cuffs of this shirt that he sends, of this crocheted bag. I mean, it is absolutely brilliant. And I had the best time having a rummage through. So wrbray.org.uk. And so I wouldn't... surprise me if he owns it, but I have to say I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. There is, do you ever have that thought when you're passing a postbox, you just think, oh, I could just put something in there? Do you, like,
yes,
if I've got my phone in my hand, it's a dangerous thing. You think, oh, I could just pop that in. Oh, no.
Yeah, just, oh, I could just slot, just slot,
nice little slot.
Yeah.
It made me wonder, when did people start routinely putting letterboxes in their front doors?
That's a good question. I don't know. And one of the things, I mean, actual letterboxes to post were around from the very start, from the Victorian era. In fact, William Bray had one in front of his house, which may well have given him the idea for all of this. I have to say, I don't know. It's a good question. One that I've not thought about.
And more and more, you can buy kind of devices where you can get a parcel delivered, can't you? Because more, you know, people shopping online and things like that, there's secure ways to get your parcel delivered. And, you know, so maybe we're going back to the world of getting things in the post more.
Maybe. I like it. So there we go. So that's
save
the story.
A fortune on wrapping. Amazon send out products unwrapped.
Just, you know, just pop a little tag on it, and in theory, if you paid the postage, and it's, you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't.
Yeah, there were people in, I think maybe in America, who posted their kids a bit. Someone at one point worked out it was cheaper than the rail fare.
No.
So for a little, I think it might have just been, I don't know, 6 months or 2 years, but for a little chunk of time, there was a thing where kids, you could post them cheaper than...
We talked about when we were, as guys, we were doing the Tate Modern, there was an artist there, wasn't there, who sent himself somewhere as a kind of bit of modern art.
Okay.
I can't remember the guy's name. I have to look it up now. But Yeah, as a piece of art, he shipped himself in a shipping container. And I think it took like 5 days or something stupid like that.
Boys,
Joseph Boys, thank you.
Joseph Boys. B-O-U-Y-S.
B-E-U-Y-S, yeah.
B-E-U-Y.
And I'm just going to have a little look because, yeah, he definitely shipped himself somewhere. I feel like he shipped himself to New York or something. But anyway.
Yeah, that's getting into kind of David Blaine territory. The magician who sat in a box by the Thames for a while and things. Yeah. So my when postcodes were new, one of my uncles or cousins sent himself a load of letters with various amounts of postcode on it to see what would get back successfully.
Oh, okay.
And he established that your house number and your postcode, that was fine.
That's enough.
That worked.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But that's a lot less detailed than Mr. Bray. So I mean,
yeah, I mean he's got very method, isn't he? I really like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And thank you. That's I knew nothing about him before. So
isn't he fun?
This is a whole delightful thing. Yeah.
So more grist of the mill when we're talking about the General Post Office.
Absolutely.
All that sort of thing. So there we go.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. Yeah. Yes. Anything before we? Oh, we do need to tell people about our
exciting
upcoming news.
In amongst our planning. Would you like to be the one to deliver? We are planning to do a live podcast recording. So we have a venue and we have a guest and we're just coordinating dates and times and making sure we can all get there on the same day. And then we will let you know, and it will be, we'll have a little bit of a lead time for it. So won't be short notice, hopefully. So hopefully as many of you as possible can come, and that'd be fabulous.
Yes. And hopefully this time next week, we will know what date it is and we can let you know, because we'd love to see as many of you as possible. And we've got a couple of other things that we've got in the pipeline. So exciting times.
Coming at you. Yeah.
So there you go. Right. Well, we'll love you and leave you here.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming along, listeners. And we will see you next week. Yay. Back to being weekly.
Back to weekly. So we definitely keep going. Fortnite.
Exactly. And it'll be Fiona next week. So you get a break from me.
Yeah. Quite probably a topic that kind of follows on in a way.
Oh. Intriguing.
You know, we'll see.
Well, you did say there was something that you're going to keep for next week. So
yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Right. Have a wonderful week, gang. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye.